All right. It is so good to see all of y'all, and we're starting a new book. It's called the Book of Hosea. Now, folks, Hosea is the 28th book of the Bible, 28th book of the Old Testament, but it's also the 28th book of the Bible. If you were to pull out an old Hebrew Bible, it would be the very first book of what's called the Book of 12. Within the Book of 12 are the 12 minor prophets. Now, they are not minor in their message by any fact of the imagination. In fact, the book of the 12, when, by the way, we've already studied all the other 11 books in this series, so we're picking up this very first book that was part of the book of the 12. They have major messages in it. The only difference between being called a minor prophet and a major prophet is the length of the written prophecy. So there's 12 minor prophets and there's 5 major prophets. Really, it's only 4. But Jeremiah also wrote the Lamentation, and we kind of include that in the minor prophets. And so we've got Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentation, Daniel, and Ezekiel are the 5 major prophecy books. And we've got these 12. Now, I just went back and thought, okay, let me just show you in a picture the difference between the 12 and the 5. In the 12 books, total combined, there are 67 chapters and 30,422 words in the English language. 67 chapters, 30,422. Don't get lost in the numbers here. In the 5 books, there are 178 chapters and 538,500 English words. In other words, those 5 books, they sure were wordy, and they sure did cover a whole lot more ground. Actually, they covered the same ground as the other books, just expanded it more. Well, Hosea is not the earliest book of the prophecies. Joel gets that honor. But Hosea is one of the longest prophesying prophets of the Old Testament, rivaling that of Daniel and Jeremiah and Isaiah and maybe even Ezekiel. Now, I'm going to go ahead and tell you this up front, and then we'll cover it again, go through it pretty quick. Hosea, right off the bat, is instructed by the Lord to go marry and have children. Now, let me picture this for you in a different way. Here we are at Sagemont Church, and we have a fine young minister that's come to our church, and he's young, and all of us have eligible daughters, and we would like for, you know, we've raised them in the right way, and we would like to, we would love for our eligible young daughters that are marrying age to, you know, pair up with this handsome young minister that we have just brought on, and boy, you know, he really... He speaks good things about the Lord, and it's really pretty incredible. And boy, this would make a fine son-in-law. Oh, yeah. And in fact, our daughter would make a fine preacher's wife. And we'd be really, really happy with him to be in our family. And so all of us, I mean, the preacher, the young, fine young preacher never has to worry about a place to eat because he's got a place every night. It seems like every place he goes and sits down, he thinks he's going just for a meal, only to find out that the eligible young daughter or granddaughter is there to be introduced to. By the way, that did happen to me at First Baptist Church in Pleasant Grove. I was graduating from high school, and for the first 6 months of the 3 years that I was there, I absolutely did starve to death, and nobody never got invited out, but as soon as May came around and I'm supposed to be graduating, all of a sudden through the summer, I'm being invited out every single night. They got a schedule. And I would land, I think, oh good, I'm going to this house and these are old folks and they're just grandmas and all that. And lo and behold, there'd be granddaughter sitting there trying to pair her up. Well, everybody's excited and you got the best of the best girls all picked out for this young minister. And lo and behold, here comes an invitation in the church bulletin. And y'all look at that name, and let's just call her Gomer. He has decided to marry a girl, and he's invited y'all all to the wedding of a young, handsome, up-and-coming pastor to Gomer. And Daddy looks at that, and he's reading that, Gomer. Honey, Yeah. Do you know Gomer? Gomer, where are you reading that? Right here on this invitation. It says our pastor's marrying Gomer. Oh, no. Is that the same Gomer that... Oh. Yeah. Oh, my soul. Gomer. What is he thinking? Gomer. Well, she stands on the corner down there and she picks up men. She's a harlot. She's a prostitute. What in the world is our little pastor thinking about? It can't be. Surely there's some other woman named Gomer. This cannot be the Gomer of our neighborhood. And then lo and behold, they find out that it is. And you think, what in the world is our pastor thinking? Has he lost his mind? Oh, we got to have a church meeting. So you call everybody, and there's people in that church that hadn't been there in 45 years that show up for this meeting. And the young, fine pastor standing up there, and the lady stands up that's going to do the talking, because it's never a man in situations like this. Never. Not in all the history of churches I've been in. Nope. What are you thinking? And the young pastor says, God told me to marry her. You wouldn't understand that, would you? You would say, I don't care what God has told you, whatever, you are out of your mind. And I guarantee you, things were not any different back in those days than they are today. You would think that that young prophet is out of his mind. And you thought he was a good young man until you saw that invitation. And now what do you think about that young man? You don't think anything good about that young man any longer, do you? In fact, you're trying to decide if we're going to have a meeting to see if we can get rid of him. Because he's marrying the local gal in town that is not faithful to any one man. Now, there'll be a few of you in the crowd that'll say, maybe he led her to the Lord, and this is a change of heart, and what a great testimony this will be. And so those people in the congregation that believe that, they win over everybody. Oh, she's changed her heart, and she's a new person in the Lord. And they get married, and then all the congregation finds out she's not changed. She's not faithful to him any longer. And the Lord says to Hosea, every time she goes to be with a man, go get your wife and bring her home. Go get her and bring her home. You be faithful to her, even though she is not faithful to you, because I want your life and your ministry and your family to be a picture of what Israel is doing to me and what I am doing with Israel. And in fact, as we read through Hosea, the genders of the pronouns and the speaking, who's speaking, change back and forth, and you really have to follow it pretty closely, because it'll be talking about Hosea and Gomer, and the next thing you know, the next sentence, or even in the middle of a sentence, he's really talking about Israel and God. And so we pick up. It says, the word of the Lord, which came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. We look at that and we think, okay, where is he talking about? I don't know why. Hosea is from the northern kingdom. And in fact, if you were reading in Hebrew, the original Hebrew of Hosea, and then go pick up the original Hebrew of the book we just finished, Amos, you'd go and you'd hear the dialect read or the words read with the way they're written. You'd go, well, that person is from Dallas. And Hosea, you're from New York. Because he had a northern accent. He had a northern dialect. And it's very clear in the original Hebrew that he was from the northern tribes. In fact, he was. He was born in Beth Shemi in the tribe, and he was from the tribe of Issachar. And so he's from the northern part of the northern kingdom. Well, Amos is a southern kingdom guy, but he's right over the border in Bethel, prophesying at the same time Hosea is prophesying. In fact, we know that because of this. Both Amos and Hosea were prophesying during the times of Jeroboam and Uzziah. Now, Amos was prophesying 2 years before the flood, which means in the Amos story, Amos prophesies, and then after the flood happens, it all gets written down. We don't know anything about the flood in the story of Hosea. All we know is that Hosea, just like Amos, starts prophesying sometime during the 38 concurrent years of both Uzziah's king, that's also Amaziah, by the way, or and Jeroboam II, between the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom, sometime in here. And then Hosea's prophecy time as the prophet continues on down through to Hezekiah. However, I forgot to put this on the board, so let me put it here. In 722 BC, the northern kingdom, NK, falls to Assyria during the days of Hezekiah. And what's interesting is Hosea does not tell us about the fall. So therefore, he probably starts prophesying just before the fall of the northern kingdom. All right. But we've got that in Amos, by the way. So Amos is continuing. So we've got this long heritage going on here. And so the fall of the southern kingdom is going to happen way down here in 606. But this is happening, going to take us right up to the fall of the northern kingdom. Very interesting. The name Hosea is only found in the Bible twice. One in Hosea chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, which is what we've just read. And in the next verse, by the way. And in Romans 9:25. And it's interesting because Paul pulls a verse out of Hosea, and really it is the theme of the book of Hosea. He says, also in Hosea, I will call those who were not my people, my people, and her who was not beloved, beloved. So wherever the Lord is, wherever this happens, somewhere in the future, when we look at Israel, somewhere there's a place where this message is being delivered, and where that happens, where the Lord says, you're not my people. I am not your God. Wherever that happens, sometime down in the future, in that very same place, the Lord is going to say, where it was said that you are not my people, you are my people now. And where it said that you were not my God, I was not your God, I am your God now. It's a promise to Israel. And over in Romans, it's a promise to Israel. It's not a promise to the Gentiles. It's a promise to Israel. So don't make it a promise to Gentiles. It's a promise to Israel. So with that, let's turn to page 2. There's your little chart up on the top that I've got up on the board for you. Let's pick up and get Gomer selected as the wife. When the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, go take for yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. Okay, wait a minute. You see right there the change. He says, Hosea, you go get your wife. Go get Gomer. Go get her and make her your wife and get children with her. Why? Because the land is committing flagrant sin against the Lord. The land is not the land. The land is the northern kingdom and all the people of the northern kingdom. So you see the swap there? Hosea, I want you to be a picture of what is happening in your family, which is what is happening in the northern kingdom. And so he goes and he gets Gomer. Gomer's name means burning coal. And in fact, her father's name, which we're going to get in the next verse we're going to read, it means completion. Which names in the Hebrew are very important. They tell the story. Gomer has this burning and lusting for sin with other men, a completeness of that. She is yielded to that completely to the point where it's like a burning coal. It sears hot inside of her. She will not turn from that. We call that addiction today, folks. We got lots of people got addiction. In fact, I know most of y'all, and most of you are addicted to something. You are. It could be anything. You're addicted. Some of y'all are addicted to tracing down your genealogy. You live and breathe for digging up bones. Some of you are addicted to cooking. You just cook. Some of you shaking your head. No, we're not addicted to cooking. No. Well, that was far-fetched, all right? Keeping your house clean. Some of you are addicted to making lists. In fact, you make a list and then you strike. When you get a couple of things made off your list, you cannot, you're so addicted to it, you cannot stand to have a mark off on it, so you rewrite your list. And it's rewriting of list after list. Is there one back there? Oh, do I have a testimony? Is that what it is? Yeah, sit down. Oh, there's one back. You know, I'm not that way. When I make a list, I'll keep adding stuff. My goal is to see a whole entire page scratched out. That's my goal, you know. Yeah, I got some of those like them. Some of you are addicted to Facebook and to Twitter or whatever. Man, I cannot even send out one thing one time in the day without about 90 of y'all responding immediately. And I'm going, are they sitting there all day just waiting for this stuff to happen? Go to the airport and see the addiction. Oh, man. Let's see. Where's mine? Let's see. Do I have? Oh, it's back here in my back pocket. Go to the airport. I used to go to the airport and have a great time talking with people. You can't even talk to people without interrupting because they're all doing this. I sure hope nobody talks to me. Now, they're talking with people in the rest of the world someplace, but they don't want to talk to you face to face. That's addiction, folks. That's an addiction. Hope that thing doesn't go off during my lesson. As y'all notice, I'm not addicted to phones at all. I'm really not. No, I'm not. No. I'm addicted to other things. Yeah? No, not even Facebook. I'm not on it. I do that. In fact, I don't hardly ever look at that. I think of a thought and I send it from the phone. And I don't get the stuff back on the phone because I don't have a data package on my phone. I'm cheap, folks. I will not pay for a data package. I am just not going to do that. So that's $9.99. That's it right there. That's all I'm going to pay for the preacher to have the privilege of calling me. You know, I got rid of my phone. Confessing now. I got rid of my phone about a year and a half ago. The preacher tried to call me on the old number. Finally talked to me in my office and he said, Dr. Jim, I tried to call you. I said, yeah, I got rid of that phone. He said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to invite you to have another phone within 24 hours and call me and tell me what the number is. That's what I got right there, $9.99. Got a phone. That's right. So the preacher can call me. And you know he uses it about every day. Yes, he does. We're all addicted to something. Gomer was addicted to lust of the flesh. We're all addicted to one of these three things. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, pride of life. That's not in your notes. It's in the Bible twice. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, pride of notes, pride of life. Every single sin that you and I do, some of y'all, I think you're pure as driven snow, but you got a sin. It falls into one of those three categories. Every sin falls into one of those three categories. And Gomer's was lust of the flesh of other men. And she would go out after them. So he went and he took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, name him Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will punish the house of Jehu for the bloodshed of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. On that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Jezreel. What in the world is this about the valley of Jezreel? Folks, the valley of Jezreel is just outside of Jerusalem to the north. It's really in the northern kingdom, to just a bit to the northwest. It's called the Valley of Jezreel here. It is also called the Valley of Jehoshaphat. It is also called the Valley of Armageddon. It's also called the Valley of Decision. Folks, more bloodshed has been shed in the Valley of Jezreel than any other place in the world. More battles have been fought there. Even in the day of Hosea, by that time, more battles and bloodshed had been fought there and had been shed there than any other place. We didn't keep fighting at the Battle of Gettysburg during the Civil War. We fought the Battle of Gettysburg and we went on someplace else. We didn't continue to fight at Shiloh. We fought the battle at Shiloh and went on someplace else. The battles kept moving. Alexander the Great did not fight a battle over and over and over again in the same place. No, he kept moving and moving. So it's the same way with the Caesars and everyone else. Only in the case of the Valley of Jezreel, the Valley of Armageddon, are battles continuing to be fought in the same place over and over and over again. In fact, the final battle and the Battle of Armageddon, now I just said that, I want you to remember this. The Battle of Armageddon is not the final battle. You got it? I know that all the advertisements on TV say that it is. I know that these movies, Armageddon, end of the world's coming, Armageddon's coming. It's not the final battle. It's not. After the Battle of Armageddon happens, there is 1,000 years, and then Satan is released to deceive the people a little longer, and then he gathers people back in the Valley of Armageddon, which is the Valley of Jezreel, to take the Lord off of his great white throne. That's the final battle. As soon as that battle is over, then comes the resurrection of the dead. Why people are worried about Armageddon, I don't know. That's 1,000 years before the world changes into what it will ultimately be. It's not the end of the world. So we got a lot of time left here, folks. Well, we may not have a lot of time. Because in an instant and twinkling of an eye, we go, we're out of here. I'm excited about that. I wish it would come today. However, you know how it is. We've got some things that are in Scripture that still got to be fulfilled before that's going to happen. So y'all go get some Geritol and live a little longer so that... Here we go. Jehu, what in the world is this about Jehu in the valley? He's naming this boy Jezreel because of what Jehu did. I'm going to catch you up. I'm not going to read it. I've actually got it down here in 2 Kings 9 for you, in 2 Kings 10. Let me tell it to you real quick. Jehu is not in the kingly line of the north or the south. He's not the descendant of a king. He's just a good soldier. And he comes up and he starts battling the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And by the way, he goes in the battle of Jezreel and he destroys Ahab. Ahab's married to Jezebel. He calls, after he gets through with Ahab, he goes up and calls down Jezebel and says, Jezebel, you come down here out of that tower. Lo and behold, one of them priests right behind him kind of gives her a push and she falls off and hits the ground. And lo and behold, the dogs come and eat everything but the palms of her hand, soles of her feet, and her skull devour her, just as was prophesied about 45 minutes before it all happened. He goes, in the valley of Jezreel, he destroys every family member of Ahab the king. And he also destroys all the relatives of the king and all the relatives of the southern kingdom, he thinks. A one-year-old little boy by the name of Joash, the son of the southern kingdom's king, is taken by the priest and some cohorts and hid in the temple so they cannot be heard crying. And Jehu does not kill that king, that little boy, just 1 year old. Jehu says to the king and to those left in the south, choose you a king. Well, they don't have a king. In fact, they end up with a woman to be the king or the queen for 6 years. And she takes her spot because she's just assuming the throne. She does for 6 years. So for 6 years, the southern kingdom has a queen instead of a king. Now, this all happens before Uzziah and Jeroboam come along. This is all back here, just a little while after the divided kingdom happens. Well, this queen is living. And all of a sudden, the priest comes out with Joash. He's 6 years old, and it happens to be a godly priest. And he tells, and the queen is killed, and Joash, 6 years old, is put on the throne. But really, the high priest is pulling the strings, but he was a good guy. And so the southern kingdom is under a good king, Joash, who's really being run. The kingdom is being run by this good high priest. We'll hear that story later on sometime. It's a great story. Well, for all that bloodshed that is shed by Jehu, the northern kingdom, no one will go against Jehu. No one will come up and be king, and they won't select anybody, so Jehu becomes king. That's how he gets to be king. That's there in 2 Kings 9, 2 Kings 10. Well, another interesting thing that happens here is this boy, this named Jezreel, because of all the stuff that has happened in the valley of Jezreel, even back in those days, we're going to find out in Hosea chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, that that wasn't Hosea's real son. No. Now that's Gomer, his wife, is having a son, But Jezreel is not the son of Hosea. Jezreel is the son of another man that she's run out to be a harlot with. So let's pick up verse 6. She then conceived again and gave birth to a daughter. And the Lord said to him, "Name her Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no longer have compassion on the house of Israel that I would ever forgive them." In fact, the word Lo-Ruhamah means no compassion, no mercy, no favor, no grace. The Lord is not going to have favor on the northern kingdom ever again. At least not on the northern kingdom of those who are against him. And most of them are against him. In fact, 90% of them are against him. Remember the message of Amos that we just got through? 90% of the people are worshiping false imaginary gods and not willing to make God God. "But I will have compassion on the house of Judah and deliver them by the Lord their God, and will not deliver them by the bow or the sword or the battle or the horses or the horsemen." What in the world is he saying here? He's going to destroy the northern kingdom, but he's not going to destroy the southern kingdom. What? I mean, tell you what, the book of Kings and historical record tells us exactly what happens here. And this is fulfilled already. When we come along in 722 B.C., during the time of Hezekiah as the king of the south, the king of the north is taken over and destroyed by the Assyrian king. They start at the top of the northern kingdom and just march south. It happens in just a few months. The northern kingdom has a lot of people. In fact, back in the days of David, in 1 Samuel 24, David numbered the people, the fighting men 20 years and older who were warriors ready to go to war in the northern 10 tribes was 800,000 men. Down in the southern two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, there were only 500,000 men ready to fight. This is a much stronger northern kingdom than the southern kingdom. And so the king comes in from Assyria and just starts at the top and marches straight down to the bottom and gets to the border of the southern kingdom, and he can't go any further. In fact, the Lord himself causes a miraculous thing to happen, and the king of Assyria turns around and retreats. There's a great message in that for you. I'm going to tell you what that message is, folks. When you ask God for an answer, if you're willing to wait on him, if he answers you yes, there's not enough human effort that you can put out that will ever gain for you or get for you the wonderful glories and the wonderful provisions that the Lord will provide when he says yes. If you call upon the name of the Lord your God for an answer and he says no, you can do everything humanly possible and you will not be able to bring in the resources to make it successful. Oh, you may get it started, but it will not be successful. It will not. It will die a death because you've gone someplace else to make it happen. I used to say it like this. You go and you think the Lord has opened a door for you, and sure enough, he's opened a door. And it's a wonderful door for you to go through. You walk through and you think, okay, here I am. The Lord's providing. Now he wants us to go through another door. Well, there's the door. And you reach over and grab that doorknob and it is locked. So you say, okay, well, we got to get this door open because the Lord opened this door. It must be for his opening this door. So you back up and kick it down. Now, how do you kick it down? You go down to the bank and you say, bank, this is God's will for us, so we need to borrow some money. Uh-uh. Who's your God then? Is it God or is it the bank? Churches that go out and borrow money and put out on the front, they put up a sign that says, this building is being funded by First Citizens National Affiliated Bank of the USA. Who's providing? And you get into it and then you can't pay the notes and the payments and you think, oh my soul, God, you know, he opened that door, it was open and we walked through it, and then this door we just had to help him a little bit, and you lose it. You know, you don't belong, it doesn't belong to you anyway. In fact, your house that you live in right now, you think it belongs to you. Don't pay your taxes to the school district and see what happens. You're just leasing it from the school district who has taken domain over it, or from the county who's taken domain over it. Yeah, you don't pay your taxes. You just wait and see. Only churches and nonprofit organizations that don't have to pay those taxes, they really pretty well own that land for just a short period of time. You got it? Anyway, go back to my story. You have to back out. You back out of the door. You think, Lord, we thought it was your will. And you look way down there, and about 50 feet down, there was a door that was standing wide open. You didn't even have to open it. You just should have walked through that door instead of kicking this door down. I wish banks would not loan money, folks. I wish they would not. Because then many of you and many of the people that I deal with every single day would not be in the circumstances they're in now. And what bothers the dickens out of me is credit cards. Now, they're a nice convenient. I don't know how I'm off on this. But they're a nice, but you need it. They are a nice convenience. But you know what? You know what? When people come to me and they cannot pay, get this, they have not paid their home rent, their rent on their apartment because they had to pay their phone bill because, you know, they can't be out of touch with people. They don't even, get this, they want to pay their car payment, but they don't pay their insurance payment. So they've gotten a ticket. You follow me? This is messed up, folks. It's messed up. And I've even had people say to me, oh, I'll say to you, you give away that car, you take that car and you go sell it, and I've got a car sitting out here, it's about 6 years old, and they'll say to me, oh, I'm not giving up this car. This was my pride. All this pride comes. This is my car, my dream car, and I'm not giving it up. Well, 10 years from now, it won't be their dream car. 10 years from now, they're thinking, this is a piece of junk. I got to get something else. We're messed up, folks. We are messed up. Our kids are messed up, and we are messed up, too. All of us are messed up. Poor me. Poor me. Every day I turn around, and one of y'all coming in my office saying to me, Brother Jim, you know that your back tire, it's low. It needs some air in it. I say to every one of you, yes, sir, it sure is. I'm waiting for it to go completely flat. That way it won't be so heavy to take off. The reality is every day I go out and I fill it up with air because it's got a lot of good tread left on it. Now, I don't know where the leak is. We've tried to find the leak. It may be in the valve stem. It may be in the rim. It may not even be in the tire. But I keep filling it up because I'm going to wear that tire down to the wear off that tire before I go buy and spend $137.22 on another tire. I am not going, because I'm not worried about it. I've got a great spare. I will change the spare. I am fine. I'm not going to spend my money. My money is my wife's money to spend, and I'll let her spend that money over and over again all the time. I don't care. She brings in curtains and everything in the world. And I go, where'd you get that money? And I realize where she got that money for. She got it out of my pocket. School doesn't pay her any money. She's not made any money at the school, so I know it's coming out of my pocket, and I am happy for her to spend it. When she's happy, never mind. I am really happy. I am so happy on that. And I'm going to wear that tire down to where it's down to where I'm going to do that. I'll keep plugging it or whatever. I don't know. It's my fault. I'm the one who builds stuff out in the my part of the concrete and run over nails and everything. It's my fault. I know it is. So I'm paying the penalty. It's a fun penalty. Every day I get to open my garage and see what's in there. The other day I opened up, a skunk ran out. You don't want to open it and have a skunk run out of your garage. Behold, it stinketh. Walked in and thought, what is that? Left the door up and thought, somebody's been into my garage. I couldn't place that smell. Because you know skunk smell of when the skunk's just around, and skunk smell of what a skunk smells like after it's sprayed, or two different kind of smells a little bit. I'm going, so I walk out the door, and as I'm turning to go in the house, a little skunk runs out. Yeah, behold, I'm out stinketh too. Here's what happens. This is a prophecy, this is a prophecy about two things. The Lord is going to bring an end in 722, the northern kingdom. But he's not going to allow that same force to come against the southern kingdom. There's absolutely no reason in the world why the Assyrians could not overrun the southern kingdom except for it was of God. When God says, no, you will not overrun them, not all the power of the Assyrian army and everybody they gathered with him could overgo against God. And God said, no, you will not go a single place for a single step further. A few weeks ago, when God said yes on the building, no one expected the provisions that came in. Had God been angry with Sagemont Church for what it had done, for whatever reason, no amount of desire or hope or fundraising or whatever could have ever brought in what we brought in. It was an answer from God, and it was yes. Some of y'all are going to have to face some answers from God when it says no. When God doesn't answer, in your case, where you think He's not answering you, His answer is no. When you pray out to Him and you want something so bad, His answer is no. Whenever it is His answer is yes, He will provide, provide, provide. And you could not have done anything to make the provisions as great as He's making. I have learned this over and over and over again. Many years ago, Travis and Kathy Terrell were so in debt that they only had one option, and the option was this. They needed to sell their house, move to Mississippi in with Mama, and start all over again. We knew what their debt was, and we decided that is the amount of money we would ask for the house. It was way over market value. Eli Tanksley was the real estate agent that came in. Travis said, "This is what I need out of this house. This is what I need the closing. You can sell it for whatever you want, but this is what I need at the closing in my check so I can clean out every bill and become debt-free." Eli looked at him and said, "You want me to sell it for what? You'll never sell it. It'll sit here forever. It needs to be sold at this amount of money right here." Travis says, "No, then it's not God's will for me to sell the house. Just list it." 2 days later, after it was listed on MLS, Eli called and he had an offer. The offer was what Eli said it should be sold for. Travis called me and said, "What should I do?" I said, "You turn it down, you tell him, no, the other amount's what you have to have or it's not God's will. It's not God's will." Eli said, "I think you're crazy. You need to sell it for this and go ahead." And Travis said, "I can't afford to sell it for that. I have to sell it for the other amount." 20 minutes later, Eli called him back and said, "Travis, you're not going to believe that. They are going to buy it for what you asked for." And it was way out of whack. I'm telling you, the price of the house was way out of whack of what it sold for. And they cleared every one of their debts and they moved to Mississippi in with his mama. You don't want to go home and live with your mama. Oh, some of y'all are mamas. Your kids don't want to come home and live with you. All right, here we go. But it was a God's will. Verse 8. When she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and gave birth to a son. And the Lord said, "Name him Lo-Ami, for you are not my people and I am not your God." He named a son by the theme of what was going on in Israel. You're not my people because you don't accept me to be your people. You don't call me as your God, so you're not my people. So we got one daughter that the name means that you're not ever going to have compassion or grace. Another, a son that means you're not my people and I'm not your God. You got a boy that's named after a bloodshed place in a valley. He says, "Even though I want you to name this boy by this name, I want you to understand something's going to happen in the future." Get this. Here it is in verse 10. I love this. "Yet the number of the sons of Israel will be like the sands of the sea, which you cannot be measured and numbered." That's the northern tribes. "And in a place where you have said to them, 'You are not my people,' it will be said," in the future it will be said, "'You are the sons of the living God.' And the sons of Judah and the sons of Israel will gather together, and they will appoint for themselves one leader," only one, "and they will go up from the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel." Folks, this hasn't happened yet. But in this place where the Lord just said to them, they named this baby, Lo-Ami, "I am not your people, you're not my people, and I am not your God," in this same place where that baby is named, one day the Lord will say, "You are my people, and I am your God." Why? Because both Israel, the northern kingdom, and Judah, the southern kingdom, the remnants of all those kingdoms will come back and will gather there, and they will call upon the name of the Lord and make Him their God. But it has not happened yet. 722, when the northern kingdom went into Assyria, they went off. Now remember the story from Amos. 3 times in Amos we found this. Whenever that Assyria comes in, 90% of the people die by the sword whenever the Assyrians come in. Only 10% go into exile. But when you're reading Kings and you're reading the story of the records of the history books, when those 10% who had called upon the name of the Lord went into exile, they became well respected over in the land. In fact, they were given vineyards. They were given places to live. They became the counselors of the kings of Assyria, and they began to multiply like an unbelievable number and move out to live in all parts of the world. But they never returned as a nation, as a 10% group, to re-inhabit the land. They didn't do that. In 606 B.C., when the southern kingdom fell, they went off to Babylon for a few years. And in 538 B.C., Cyrus the Great, last chapter of the second chronicle, says, you return. In fact, go build everything back. It's going to be my land. It belongs to me. You're still under the Persian control, but go rebuild and go live back on your own land. It's not going to be your land, but I'm going to control it, but go back and build. So they went back as a nation, but the northern kingdom never did. When's the northern kingdom going to do that? It doesn't happen until there's 7 years of tribulation, and then the Valley of Armageddon, the Battle of Armageddon that happens, and all the nations of Israelites and Judah, they are all gathered and they all fly back in on the wings of an eagle, the scripture says, and they come back into the land only to go through tribulation. But then after that Valley of Jezreel, they go into the thousand-year kingdom, and they are married to the land into that time. That thousand-year time, they are married to the land. They are back on their promised land, and it's not just the kingdom that was under the control of Saul, or the kingdom that was under the control of David, or the kingdom that was under the control of Solomon, or any of these kings. It's the kingdom that was promised to the Lamb, the promise to them through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, all the way from the Euphrates River down to the Nile River. That's the land that's controlled, and they are wed to that land, and they are wed to the Lord God, and they call him Isi, which means husband. They will call God their husband. And lo and behold, you got to understand, that's what it means when it says Beulah land. Beulah land's not for you and me. Beulah land is the word that's used whenever they are wed back to their land, all the promised land. That's what Beulah land means, wed to the land. Well, looky there. So you call that. That place, it's going to happen. Looky here. Say to your brothers, he's talking to Jezreel, the oldest son. Say to your brothers, Ami, and your sisters, Ruham. That means say to all the people of the land, all the women and all the men both. Say to them, contend with your mother, contend, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband, and let her put away her harlotry from the face and her adultery from between her breasts. He's really saying, go to all the people of the northern kingdom and say, stop this adultery. Stop this chasing after other gods, because there is no other God. Stop chasing after false idols. Stop chasing after them. Contend with them. You're through government leadership and with your religious leadership, but they won't contend with them. They can't. The wife is not even going to be willing. Verse 3 says, I will strip her naked, expose her as on the day when she was born. Either change or you'll be destroyed. And that's exactly what happens. The Lord kept his promise. That's fulfilled. I will also make her like the wilderness, make her like desert land, and slay her with thirst. Also, I have no compassion on her children. Also, I have no compassion on her children because they are children of harlotry. For their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has acted shamefully. He's talking about both, about the nation of Israel, but also about Gomer. Jezreel is not Hosea's boy. Gomer conceived him with a man that's not Hosea. Rahama is not Hosea's daughter. She was conceived by another one of the lovers. Ami is not Hosea's son. She was conceived by another lover. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who gave me my bread and my water and my wool and my flax and my oil and my drink. Wool and flax. That's all talking about her clothing. Listen, those lovers did not give this stuff to her. No, her husband gave that to her. Her husband provided for her what she was wearing and the dangling necklaces and the chains and whatever she wore to put on in her high heels. I wonder if they had high sandals back in those days. Might as well have. You've seen some of them today. They're nothing but straps all strapped together. And I think, how are those women wearing those things like that? And you know, the older you get, the harder it is to get up like that. I just want to make sure you know that. I don't see many of y'all wearing those 6-inch heels anymore. My daughter puts on 6-inch heels and she comes up to me this high. And I'm thinking, boy, you sure grown up, girl. She takes them off and she's this high. She looks better in them. I like high heels. Makes her look feminine. Yep, looks good. Then she comes to me, my feet are hurting. I said, well, that's the price you have to pay. The problem is she's using this wool and this water and this wine and this drink and this oil, this perfume, in other words. She's using it, her husband has provided, but she's using it to go after her lovers. Therefore, hedge up, I titled this, therefore, behold, I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her path. Israel, the northern kingdom, is going to be walled up, and Gomer is going to be walled up also. She will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them. She can chase off them all she wants, but she's not going to catch up with them. They can chase after the idols, but the idols don't mean anything. They can't get anything. She can't get anything from her idols. Not at all. They don't provide anything. They're not even in existence. They are a figment of a man's imagination that built it, carved out, and covered it with gold and set it up there for them to bow for. Can you think how stupid that is? How stupid is that? Go out in your garage, Paul Renfro, and carve up something on your bandsaw. Go cover it with gold, stick it up on your mantle, and tell Wilma to go down and bow at it. Just think about what that means. It ain't no way, Jose. That's right. That just seems absurd to us, doesn't it? Oh, yet you can go out there and you can let somebody carve a statue of what they think Peter looks like. And hundreds of thousands of people have come and kissed his toe to where the toe's wearing off. Somebody needs to write a sign and put it up on Peter where he's holding it. It says, ain't no way, Jose. That's how silly it is. How silly it is. Therefore, heads up. You can seek him or not. You can find him, but you're not going to find him. Then she will say, oh, since I can't catch up with my lovers, I will go back to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. Uh-huh. When things get rough and the lovers have shunned her because they're tired of her and they're going back to their families, where's she going to go back to? To her husband. So in her midst, in the northern kingdom, there were periods of time where they kind of looked back at God. But it wasn't for long. No, they liked the idols too much. They liked that too much. For she does not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil, and lavished on her the silver and the gold, which they used for Baal. In going and worshiping their false god Baal, or Baal, they went and used what God had given them for that purpose. That's like saying this. Baal has given me $1,000. Blessed be the name of Baal. When it was really God who gave it to you. When it was really God. Now, husbands, if your wives took some of your money and went and gave it away and say they got that from some other source and didn't give you credit, how would that make you feel? How do you think it makes God feel? To give something else credit for something he did. The New Testament calls that blasphemy. Here we go. Therefore punished. Oh, by the way, Amos chapter 8, last week we studied it. Same message. Here it is. Behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will send a famine on the land, not a famine of bread or of thirst of water, but rather for hearing the word of God, people will stagger from sea to sea and from the north even to the east. They will go to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, but they will not find it. In that day, the beautiful virgins and the young men will faint from thirst. As for those who swear by the guilt of Samaria, that is calf worship of Baal, who says, as your God lives, O Dan. Now that's the calf worship in the very top of the kingdom. And as the way of Beersheba lives, that's down at the bottom of the kingdom, they will fall and not rise again. What's going to happen? They're going to be punished. Therefore, I will take back again grain at harvest time and my new wine in its season. In other words, he's not going to let Israel have it. I will also take away the wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And then I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one will rescue her out of my hand. I will also put an end to her gaiety, her feast, and her new moons, and her Sabbaths, and all her festal assemblies. I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, of which she says, these are my wages, which my lover has given me. And I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field will devour them. I will punish her for the days of the Baals, when she used to offer sacrifice to them and adorn herself with her earrings and jewelry and follow her lovers so that she forgot me, declares the Lord. Back in 1405 BC, they started conquering the northern kingdom. And for 40 years, they were in the wilderness. They came out and they started conquering the kingdom. And when they went out to conquer the kingdom, the Lord went before them and the Lord conquered for them. They really did not have to fight. They really didn't have to fight. But now, just 683 years later, they are fixing to lose their land because they have not stayed true to Him as their God. They've played the harlot with every other nation and with every other god, and they're fixing to lose their land in 683 years. In fact, Amos chapter 5, verse 21 said almost the same thing Hosea just said. Amos 5:21 says, I hate, I reject your festivals, nor do I delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offered up to me burnt offerings and your grain offerings, I will not accept them, and I will not even look at the peace offerings of your fatlings. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not even listen to the sound of your harps. Hosea is saying one thing in the north. Amos is saying the same thing in the south. And they're not listening. Therefore, promised. Therefore, behold, I will allure her. Talking about Gomer and also the nation of Israel. Bring her into the wilderness and speak kindly to her. Whoa, wait a minute. They've already done the wilderness thing. How are they going to go into the wilderness? Let me explain it to you. Remember this. The 10% who lived through the Syrian onslaught went to Assyria and became well respected. There the Lord spoke kindly to them after he got them out of Israel. Then I will give her vineyards from there in the valley of Achor as a door of hope. What does that mean? He goes over there in Assyria and they get land to live on. And he's going to call it the valley of Achor, the door of hope. What happened in Achor? What happened in the valley of Achor? It's right outside of Jericho. They went right across the Jordan River and they went to Jericho. They marched around it all these days. All of a sudden, they blew the trumpet on the last day, and the walls came tumbling down, and the instruction from the Lord was, you go in and you destroy every person in the city of Jericho. You take everything down to the ground, and everything you find, their household idols, their tables, their chairs, their everything, grind it up and leave it there and pulverize it. Yet there was one man of one tribe, of one family, who found a little gold household idol of gold, and he lusted after it. He took it and he hid it in his tent. They went for their next battle, and the Lord did not fight for them in that battle. And the whole nation of Israel that had taken down Jericho was defeated in that battle and backed up. And that night, Joshua said, we've got trouble in the camp. We've got sin in the camp. Something's going on in this camp. We've got to find out what it is. So they called all the tribal leaders together, and they chose one tribe. They chose all from the one tribe. They gathered all the families together, and they chose one family, and that was the family of Achan. Sure enough, in Achan's tent, they found buried there in the sand underneath the tent, they found that little gold idol. And because of that little gold idol, there in the valley of Achor, they killed Achan and every single one of his blood kin because he disobeyed the Lord. Throughout the rest of Hebrew history, from that day on, the word the valley of Achor meant tribulation. Time of trouble and tribulation. The Lord says, after your time of tribulation and Israel, then that will be your door of hope. Sure enough, in the future, after Israel goes through its time of tribulation for 7 years, that becomes the door of hope once they get past the valley of Jezreel and go into the thousand-year kingdom. Let's read the passage here. And she will, verse 15, then I will give her vineyards from there in the valley of Achor as a door of hope. And she will sing there as the days in her youth, as in the days when she came up out of the land of Egypt. It will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that you will call me Ishi. That means husband. For no longer, you will no longer call me Bali, which means they were mispronouncing him's name. He was taken, when they worshiped Baal, They thought they were worshiping God, but they were not. For I will remove the names of Baals from their mouths, so that they will be mentioned by their names no more. In that day I will also make a covenant for them with the beast of the field and the birds of the sky and the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow and the sword and the war from the land and will make them lie down in safety. When does all that happen? It didn't happen when Israel came back on the land in May of 1948. No, they came back on the land. It was declared by the UN, and lo and behold, they had to start the fight. They had to go take the land back from the Islam Muslim people, if you remember. That wasn't the deal. No. It only happens when they get to the 1,000 years. That's whenever the lion will lay down with the lamb. That's when the covenant is made with the beast of the field. That's what he's talking about. Verse 19. I will betroth you to me forever. It's not going to happen till then. That's when he's betrothed forever. Husband and wife. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and in compassion. And I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Lord. It will come about in that day that I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the heavens, and they will respond to the earth. And the earth will respond to the grain, and to the new wine, and to the oil. And they will respond to Jezreel. It's all going to be a response to what happened here in the Valley of Armageddon, the Valley of Jezreel. That's the door that gets them into this new time. I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will also have compassion on her who had not obtained compassion. And I will say to Israel who was not my people, that you are my people, and they will say, you are my God. And that's the testimony that happens when they're in this land. Chapter 3 is only 5 verses, so I included. Let's get through it pretty quick. Get your wife. Then the Lord said to me, go again. Go again. In other words, go again and get her. Love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the sons of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. We'll talk about raisin cakes later sometime. So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver. 15 shekels of silver, about the half the price of a dowry for a wife. So he's not going to buy a woman from her father with a dowry. No. No, he's having to redeem somebody here. And he also adds to it a homer and a half of barley. That's about half what you'd pay for a slave. So he's not going to get her as a slave. So he's adding the two together. That's not enough money. Then I said to her, you shall stay with me for many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So I will also be towards you. I'm going to be faithful to you. Wife, I want you to be faithful to me. Hosea has to go and get her out of a man's... For some reason, she is in the care of some man, which was her lover, and she's now part of his harem, and Hosea is instructed to go purchase her back. Folks, there's not many men who will go and purchase their wife back when they go and run the fields. And there's not many women who will go and purchase their husbands back when they go and run the fields. Oh, they may let them come back, but they're sure not spending any money on them. You follow me? But the Lord said, go buy her back. All this stuff with Israel, he promised. Remember back in Exodus, he said it was going to happen, and it's going to happen. Everything is happening just like he said before they ever left the wilderness in 1405 B.C., It's just being played out. How does God know that? Because He's God. He knows everything that happens. He even knows the questions and the petitions that you're going to place before Him before you ever even think about them. Why? Because He knows what's going to happen. And you'll place a petition or a request from Him, and it'll take some time, and the time that passes is not for Him to answer. But the time for it to pass is the time for you to get your heart right with Him. So that you, whatever His answer it is, be it yes or no, you still give Him all the glory. And 100 years from now, you can look back and say, I understand now why He said no. And if any of y'all leave another 100 years, I want your potion, whatever you got. For the sons of Israel remain for many days without king or prince. Yeah. They're fixing to fall, and they're not going to have a king or prince. In fact, even after they fall, they're not going to have a king or prince for many, many days. Afterward, the sons of Israel will return, and they will seek the Lord their God and David their king, and it will come, and they will come trembling to the Lord and to his goodness. When? In the last days. You got to get to the last days here. And that's whenever they will accept him and they call him. Oh, we're just into the first three of the 14 chapters. And so we'll go on down later on, starting next week in chapter 4. I hope you come back and bring a friend. We got some space on the edge here to add some chairs. So we'll look into that next week. Bring a friend. Folks, you need to bring a friend. You hear me? Bring a friend. They need to know what it means to be faithful. Remember, everything with the Lord is about your faithfulness. And what you got to understand is when he says no, you still got to be faithful. And when he says yes, you still got to be faithful. Don't stop being faithful when he says yes and blesses you. And that's what happens most of the time. Oh, just blessed and blessed. I hear it in my office all the time. You ought to hear Sally talk about it. So-and-so came in. She said, I'm blessed. The Lord just blesses me. Oh, he's blessed me up one side, down the other. Oh, he's blessed me on the front. He's blessed me on the back. He's blessed me on the side, on the south, on the north, on the east, and the west. Some of them are big enough. There's north, south, east, and west on them too, by the way. Bless me this, bless me that. I said, well, why were they in the office? Well, they can't pay their rent. I said, I thought the Lord is blessing you. Bad attitude, wrong attitude. By the way, even today, if you bless the Lord and give him praise when it's not with the right heart, he will not listen to your praise either. He doesn't want to hear your songs of praise whenever it's not done with the right heart. Lord Jesus, we thank you that God allowed the words of the Scripture to be put into this text so that we could read it. Lord, may we be faithful to you no matter what happens, because you are faithful to us no matter what happens. Bless you. We ask these things in your name. Amen.